You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Radio Aryan Britannia. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's date is Monday, the 16th of April, 2018. You're listening to this at radioaryan.com. Hopefully, if you're not, then do check out the website where you will find all the rest of our podcasts on there and also a link to our live stream. I was hoping to have Max Musson with me today, but he was unable to make it. Hopefully we'll get him for next week and he'll be my regular co-host since we no longer have Alex Davies. And since this is a podcast where we mainly look at British news and things that are occurring in Britain, I'm going to leave out what's going on in Syria. And I think what I'm going to talk about is Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech, which has been in the news recently because the BBC produced an audio version of it, and this caused a lot of complaints from Negroes and complaints from Jews in the establishment, which really just proves that Enoch Powell was right when he said that blacks will have the whip hand over the whites. But the main reason why I wanted to talk about it today is because Jacob Rees-Mogg, who I have supported in the past, produced a tweet over the weekend condemning Enoch Powell's speech. He basically reproduced a copy of what his father said about it, which was criticising Enoch Powell and supporting Ted Heath. Now, I believe he's the guy that brought us into the EU, and he's also been accused of paedophilia. He was saying that Ted Heath was he was right to censor Enoch Powell for making this speech and how Enoch Powell was wrong. And Jacob Rees-Mogg was supporting all this and saying, I have exactly the same views as my father. And this is a huge disappointment. He's had masses of criticism from people on the right for saying this, because we did think that he was a traditional old-school conservative, but obviously not. If he's going to toe the establishment line on this and not have the balls to speak up about the fact that what was said in this speech has all come true. I mean, it was very, very prophetic. So what I'm going to do, I've taken some notes of the gist of what he's saying, because I don't want to just repeat the speech verbatim, and then I'll discuss some of what he is talking about and how it refers to us today, how it fits in with what's going on today. And he starts the speech by making a point that warning about things is not causing them. Two different things there. He was warning about what was going to be the result of all the immigration, all the non-white immigration. And he was warning about the violence that was going to come from this. And that's only in a very small part of it. But he wasn't causing it. You don't cause something to happen by warning about it. And this is something that we do still see happening today. And I'm thinking particularly of the nationalist camps here, where nationalists go on camps and they learn self-defense, how to protect themselves against leftists. And the mainstream media portrays it as, oh, they are preparing for a race war. They're learning how to attack people. No, they're learning how to defend people. And when we talk about a race war, we are trying to avoid the coming race war. It is going to happen. We're not trying to make it happen. We don't have to do anything to make it happen. It's happening all around us. 1,400 white girls raped in Rotherham. 1,200 raped in Rochdale by Muslim grooming gangs. Somebody is killed every day in London by non-whites. We've got stabbings, we've got shootings, we've got acid being thrown in people's faces. Warning about these things is not the cause of them. That's as ridiculous as when they say that criticizing Muslims is causing them to carry out their terrorism. Donald Trump had better watch what he's saying about Muslims, otherwise they'll blow themselves up or they'll start beheading people. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you know, if you see something going on, you have to speak up about it. That's your duty. If you see something that is dangerous or harmful, then it's your duty to raise the alarm. And what Enoch Powell was doing with this speech was raising the alarm. He wasn't setting the fire. The fire had already been lit. He was pointing to where the fire is and suggesting ways that it could be put out. And yet the establishment and the mainstream media, the only media at the time, decided to blame him for this and say that he was causing this, which is absolute nonsense. And fairly on in the speech, he does come out with that famous phrase that the blacks will have the whip hand over the whites. And they do have the whip hand over the whites. White people now get turned down for jobs purely because of the fact that they are white. The BBC can advertise for only blacks and members of the non-white community to apply for this job. The army can ask for non-whites to apply for a job and not whites. The police can say, non-whites only apply for this job. We don't want any white people. That is the black man with a whip hand over the white, where we've got blacks in government, where we've got black MPs. That is the black man with the whip hand over the white. You certainly don't see white MPs in Nigeria or the Congo or in Rwanda. Not even in India. You don't see them in any of these non-white countries. And yet, somehow, we have managed to allow non-whites, Negroes, to take the most important positions in our society. And yet people today, the leftists today, are saying that this speech was wrong. How can anybody say that it was wrong for him to predict that the black would have the whip hand over the white, when it's quite clear that they do? And not just the blacks either, the Muslims as well. We're not allowed to criticize Muslims. You know, if you have a certain group in society that you are not allowed to criticize, then they most definitely have the whip hand over the whites. And this is one of the things that he missed out, was the effect that Islam and Islamic immigration would have on the country. I mean, things are now far worse than they actually were then, and a lot worse than his prediction. And he moves on, and another point that he makes is that each one of the immigrants that come over here have the capability of producing five more. So, you know, each one is going to marry someone, and they're going to produce three children. And if you're looking at Negroes from the third world, from Africa, they have seven or eight children. So each one Negro could be responsible for producing 10 more and also bringing over all the rest of his family. This is another thing that he didn't foresee, was the Human Rights Act, the human right to a family. So if you have a Negro that gets citizenship in Britain, it's his right to invite over all his extended family from where he came from. So you could end up with 20 or 30 of them for each one that you allow in. How can anyone say that is not correct, to say that each one is going to produce five more? And because of this, he then points out that even if immigration was to be stopped, it still would not solve the problem. You would still have all these Negroes here. They would still need repatriation. Which is what people get really shocked about. I mean, they talk about ethnic cleansing. They talk about how terrible ethnic cleansing is. But they didn't have any qualms about cleansing the Germans from the countries that they were living in after the Second World War. 2 million Germans, I believe it was, that had to pack up their bags and just walk across Europe. And nobody complained about that. And yet, somehow, it's a bad word today to say ethnic cleansing. Nothing wrong with having ethnic purity in an area. In fact, you want ethnic purity. This is the problem with having non-whites and immigrants here, is that they will interbreed with the white race, They will interbreed with us, and they will contaminate our own ethnic integrity. It's already happened in places like London. You just see lots of mutts. People that, they're just like sort of dirty brown colour, indeterminate race, mystery meat people. You really can't tell their actual heritage. They're just mongrels with no loyalty to the country, no loyalty to a nation, not even any loyalty to any ancestors, because they don't have any ancestors that look like them. You know, they've been disowned by their own ancestors because their parents have interbred with other races. So even if we were to stop immigration now, we would still need to be repatriating the ones that are here. And one of the criticisms that gets levelled against nationalism, oh, you just want to genocide everyone. Oh, you just want to kill everyone. How would you deal with the people that are already here? You would have to force them out of the point of a gun. Well, that's not true. If you were to offer these people large sums of money to go back to the land that they came from, most of them would take it. You think about it. If you were to be offered $5,000 or $10,000 to move somewhere, you would take it. And that would be less than the benefits bill for a lot of these people. And they could go back to Libya or wherever on the African continent and bring £10,000 with them. I mean, that's got to be a year's wage, probably more than that even. It really wouldn't be that hard to encourage the people that are here to go back. You could also refuse them housing. You could refuse them benefits. You could refuse them schooling. You could refuse them healthcare. You could have all these soft ways of encouraging people to move out. Just changing the law so that everybody was equal under the law would make life uncomfortable for them, because then they would get no more special treatment. So it's not enough just to stop immigration. We have to start repatriation as well. And this is a point that Harold Covington makes. Even if they were to stop all the immigration in America today and start trying to repatriate people, America is just too big a place to take back. It's much more likely and realistic to expect to take back a small part of the country. Now, in Britain, we are between 15 and 20% non-white now. It's getting to the point where, you know, we may have to look at just isolating and securing a certain part of Britain. And if you look at London, 60% non-white. You know, you've got places like Luton, which are 70% non-white. I mean, how are you going to deal with areas like that? I mean, it may be better just to say, well, all the non-whites move there. You can all move there. We'll hand over our capital to you. I mean, it really hurts me to say it, but what else can we do? London is fallen. We have a non-white mayor that is running things in London, a Paki mayor that's running things. Again, that's an example of the black having the whip hand over the white. Now, I was mentioning there that all we would have to do is make everybody equal before the law. And that would impact strongly against non-whites who have this privileged position. And this is something else that Enoch Powell brings up, the fact that we are no longer equal under the law. The Race Relations Act was being put through Parliament at the time. So he was speaking against that, which is an act that makes it illegal to criticise non-whites, that takes away our freedom of association. Freedom of association means that you are free to associate with whoever you like. You are free to employ whoever you like. You are free to live next to whoever you like. Now, if you were to say to a normie today, that's what freedom of association is, they would tell you, oh, yes, well, we have freedom of association. I can employ whoever I like. I can be friends with whoever I like. But no, you can't. If you were to put an advert in the newspaper saying white people only can apply for this job, you would be accused of racial discrimination. If you were to say white people only in this restaurant, you would be accused of racial discrimination. So we are not allowed to have freedom of association. Freedom of association has been taken from us. And the right to speak the truth, the right to speak what we see, has been taken from us. And this is the most fundamental part of being a human being, is to explain the way that you see the world to those around you. And the Racial Relations Act and the subsequent acts since then have made that illegal. The truth no longer matters in court. What matters is whether an ethnic minority is upset by what you are saying. Doesn't matter if it's true. It doesn't matter if an ethnic minority is actually upset. You could get a white liberal that will get upset on behalf of the ethnic minority. This is this third party ruling that they have with racial discrimination nowadays. So we're no longer equal before the law. And at the time, he was speaking out against this. And it's just got worse since then. I mean, at the time, you wouldn't see adverts like the ones I was talking about for the BBC saying, looking only for non-white applicants to apply. That wouldn't have happened. You were just not allowed to say that you only wanted white people to apply to rent a house or what have you. So things have progressed far worse than what he was suggesting at the time. We are far more unequal now before the law than we were at the time. And anyone that wants to stand up for personal liberty and personal freedom like the libertarians do, I mean, this is an essential part of it, surely. Being allowed to associate with whoever you like. And the freedom of association means that you can form associations as well. It means that if I wanted to form an association of white people, I would be able to. But of course, I'm not. And another part of this, after this law came out, ethnic minorities were allowed to form associations to advocate for their interests, but white people are not allowed to do the same. The inequalities that these laws are supposed to rectify don't rectify anything at all. They just make things unfair and unequal for the white people that are the only people that thought up a system of law in the first place. Negroes never had a system of law. They never had a system of justice. It was always the law of the jungle. There was no redress if anybody had done you wrong. They just went out and attacked the next village. And it didn't matter if the next village had actually been the one that had harmed you. It was just their custom. They would go out and attack the next village. The next village would get attacked and they would go out and attack the next one. And eventually, after a year of going around the whole continent attacking villages, the first village that had committed the crime would get attacked by the last one. And they'd have forgotten, you know, the reason why they were doing this in the first place by that time. And that's in the book Negroes from Negroland, if you want to find out more about that. So these people that are here, they have no right to be judged under the same laws that we created for our people. They weren't created for them. It's like non-whites today saying that they have a right to come into America, they have a right to be treated under the American Constitution. Well, they don't. If they're illegal immigrants and they've broken into America, they don't have any rights at all. It's like a burglar that has broken into your home. You have the right to defend your home. So you could shoot the burglar. I mean, nowadays they would try to prosecute you for that. But it's always been an Englishman's home is his castle. And it's the same with your country is your castle. If somebody breaks in and they're an illegal immigrant, they don't have any rights at all. No rights whatsoever. Yet somehow they try to claim that they come under the same rights as we do. And this comes down to this Human Rights Act, where all humans are the same, regardless of what type of human they are or what they've contributed to civilization or whether they even had a civilization. I mean, Negroes just copy what white people do. They don't have any original ideas themselves of how to further civilization. They just imitate what white people do. And not very well at that. Even jokes nowadays come under racial discrimination. You're not even allowed to make jokes about other races or events in history. Just recently, we had Count Dankula with his dog there that everybody heard about, and Ricky Gervais and other mainstream comedians got behind it and were saying, what is this? How can you prosecute someone for making jokes? But this has been going on for years. I mean, Joshua Bonehill, he's still in prison now, I believe. He should be out soon. He was put in prison for a meme that he did of a Jew outside Auschwitz with some Roundup weed killer. I mean, it's just a joke. It's a cartoon. But he was given 4 years for that. Then there was a picture of Luciana Berger with Chaka Amuna in her arms, suckling on her or in a nappy or something like that. It was basically inferring that Chaka Amuna is a baby and that he sucks up to Luciana Berger. And he was prosecuted for that as well. These are just jokes. And you've got Lawrence Burns, who was writing about how he felt about Negroes in private on his Facebook page and his Facebook comments that only his friends could see. And he was prosecuted for that. And I dare say he was just joking there. I mean, the phrases we use to describe these non-whites, I mean, they are jokey phrases. They are jokey terms. They make people laugh when you hear them. Jungle bunny, jigaboo, words like that. Merchant, they all have a humorous tone to them. They don't mean anything nasty, and yet they're supposed to be hate-filled. We still have Irish jokes. Nobody complains about Irish jokes. Irishman, a Scotsman, and an Englishman. All these jokes, that's allowed. But as soon as you start making jokes about non-whites, then you can run foul of this legislation. So we are no longer equal under the law. We never could be equal under the law because these other races are not equal to us. We are superior to them in most measurable ways. And you can say that Negroes, some of them might be able to run a little bit faster. Some of them may be able to jig around a little bit more. But, that's like saying, cheetahs can run faster than humans. They are different species and we are different subspecies to the Negro. Our ways of doing things, our society is built upon do unto others as you would have done to yourself. And that is not something that a Negro can work out for himself. He cannot put himself in another man's shoes. He's not capable of abstract thought. He can only live in the here and now, in the present. This is why they don't maintain anything. This is why they don't put anything aside for a rainy day. They are not equal to us. So in order to try to change nature, change reality, they've had to bring in all these laws and force them upon people. And they will end up using every resource that we have trying to change reality, because you cannot change the way that people are. You cannot change the way that things are created. The Negro was created to be a Negro. He wasn't created to be a white man. He wasn't created to function as a normal white man in white society. He's just going to fail. Anyway, I've been talking for quite a while now, and since I am on my own for this podcast, I think it's time we had a musical break. And what I've picked out for today is a track by Ian Stewart, and this is called Old Albion.
Scent of an English meadow wafts gently through the bars. Sound of summer harvesting can be heard from afar. Aryan, beauty hard to beat. But the mind has been corrupted by the changing power seat. Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Warriors slandered, thrown into their jails, kept from all the loved ones in dungeons deep and stale. They say that self-defense is no offense until the law starts with their lies. We'll send you down for protecting your own, already guilty in the lying eyes. Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Hearts are full of love and pride, for Europe is our home. The hills and dales are in our souls, and the forests ours to roam. As we lie back in our cells and think of times gone by, we think back of our lives and homes and the girls who wait and cry. Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away? Will we stand and watch them taking our freedom away?
And if you like that track, you should check out our music podcast that we have on Tuesdays here at Radio Aryan, Forest Brothers Audio Insurgency, which is hosted by Lord Goyhammer, where he plays all the latest nationalist tunes as well as the old classics. You get an hour of nationalist music every Tuesday, moving from Fashwave to folk music to rock against communism. So do remember to check that out. And that was Ian Stewart with Old Albion. Okay, moving back to Enoch Powell's speech here. Next up, he mentions about the English being a persecuted minority, which is what we are now. It's acceptable to talk about white guilt. It's acceptable to blame white people for slavery when white people were slaves. The very word slave itself is derived from the word Slav, from when the Muslims made slaves out of the Slavs. And it never gets mentioned that we actually looked after the slaves well. The Arabs used to castrate their Negroes. 9 out of 10 of them used to die. The Arabs used to castrate their Negroes. And what we did, when we went to America and we had slaves, we imported Negresses so that the Negroes could have wives. And we allowed them to imitate us. We allowed them to have mock marriage ceremonies. We allowed them to breed with their wives. We allowed them to live with their wives. We put a roof over their heads. We clothed them. We taught them how to read and write, how to operate machinery. You know, we were really good to these people. If they'd been left in Africa, they would have been eaten, which was eventually what would happen to these slaves. And never forget that we are the ones that actually did away with slavery. We are the ones that put a stop to it. And yet we're told today that we should feel guilty for that. We should just open up our borders. It's perfectly okay to mock white people, to mock the English particularly. The English people don't even have their own parliament. We have devolved parliaments in Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland. The English don't even have a devolved parliament. They don't even have any representation. The English are a persecuted minority. and they're not able to form groups and advocate for their own interests because that would be racist. And we are being turned into a minority in our own countries. We already are in many places. Luton, as I mentioned earlier, the English only make up 30% of Luton now, where Tommy Robinson is from. We only make up 40% in London. Places like Birmingham and Manchester are rapidly becoming overthrown by these non-whites. We already have a Pakistani mayor in London. We have a black mayor in Bristol. And these idiots in the establishment cheer this on. David Cameron says that he wants to see a Muslim prime minister within his lifetime. I mean, these people are just rolling over and giving up and cheering on their own demise. They are applauding when our own white people get replaced by non-whites. And don't forget, when they first came here on the Windrush, we were being told that they were here to do the jobs that we didn't want to do. And these Negresses were here to be nurses because nobody wanted to be nurses. Nobody wanted to be dustmen. Nobody wanted to be train drivers. When I was a kid, everyone at school wanted to be a train driver. You know, kids want to drive trains. They want to drive buses. And yet we were told that we didn't want to do all of that. And these Negroes are here to do the jobs that we don't want to do. They say the same today about European immigration. They say that East Europeans are here to do the jobs that we don't want to do. They're here to do the fruit picking, jobs like that on the farms. Those jobs used to be done by the travellers. We've always had our own travelling community, Irish travellers, pikies, and they would do the fruit picking. But now we have the Eastern Europeans and we have the East European gypsy, who is a completely different kettle of fish to the Irish traveller or the Irish gypsy. These ones that come from Romania, the Roma. If you look at them, they are really, really quite clearly non-white, whereas a lot of the Irish traveller types are white. They just happen to be travellers. They just happen to live on the road. And we've moved on from saying, oh, they are here to do the jobs that we don't want to do, to now saying that 10% of all the top jobs that everybody wants to do has to be made up of non-whites. And by that, I mean jobs like the ones on the television, where they're now saying that 10% of all broadcast productions have to be non-white. They are saying that we have to have non-white board members on the company of directors. We have to have non-white MPs. And rather than giving these jobs to people on merit, giving these jobs to the people that are best qualified for the job, they're giving these jobs to people just purely because of the colour of their skin, purely because they happen to be a different race, which we've always been told is racism when it applies to white people. But as soon as it's applying to these other races, all of that goes out of the window, and idiots applaud this, like the BBC comedian who was dropped after years of working for the BBC. And the reason he was given is because they wanted a non-white one. Nothing to do with merit, nothing to do with his work, but just the fact that they wanted to have a black comedian scriptwriter instead. And when you look at these black comedians, they're useless. There's nothing worse than a black or a packy actor. They just do not have the expressions, the facial expressions that we do. And they don't have the range and depth of emotion that we do. And this was pointed out about the Negro in a lot of the early racial literature written around slavery times, that the Negro just cannot express these emotions on his face, the depth of emotions that we do. And if he cannot express the emotions on his face, then that means that he cannot feel those emotions, because there is nothing created in nature that has a function but no form to go with it. You know, if somebody is, what would be the point in him feeling them if nobody could actually tell that he was feeling them? There has to be, form follows function. You have to have both together. So so it's absolutely pointless giving blacks a role as actors and actresses. They just have two looks, happy and sad. That's it. How can they convey anything else when, you know, you can't even see what the movements on their face. You can't even see the features on their face. They just have a grimace. I mean, I remember the days when newspapers were in black and white. Now, you imagine what Negroes looked like in these old black and white photographs. You couldn't tell one apart from the other. It just is this dark black blob in the middle of the paper. I remember seeing Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, and he was just a black blob. You really couldn't tell him apart from anybody else. It's only that we've now got such technology that in high definition television that they can put these blacks and non-whites on there. We can actually see. They have to have a 1,000-watt light bulb glaring into their faces so that we can see if there is any movement there, but they cannot convey any emotion. It's pointless putting them on there. It's a joke, really. It's a joke on white people that clap and cheer and say, isn't it great when a Negro wins an award for acting when they can't actually show any emotion on their faces anyway. So the English are quite clearly a persecuted minority now, even if they weren't back then, and they were back then, obviously, because they were bringing in the Race Relations Act, the racial discrimination laws. And the next point that Enoch Powell points out is white flight and the concept of white flight and the fact that Negroes would move into an area and the whites would move out and the property prices would drop down. Now, this was done deliberately. This was done deliberately, especially by Jewish slumlords. They would move Negroes in, drive the property prices down, and then buy up all the properties. There's a Richard Edmonds was giving a speech the other day, and he was talking about some of this and one of the reports of it about one of the, and this was in a mainstream newspaper, I believe it was the Daily Mirror, and they were talking about these black prostitutes and black drug dealers. And they would be deliberately put into an area such as Notting Hill, which is now all gentrified. That was an area that was full of these black pimps and black drug dealers. And if you were not able to move out and you were the last white person living there, your life would be a living hell. These poor old age pensioners that, you know, that didn't have enough money to move out, that were then stuck there with the dregs of the third world living around them, feel so sorry for them. And Enoch Powell was pointing this out. And he talks about one particular little old lady, and she ended up having dog excreta thrust through her letterbox and all the sorts of things that we are told that white people did to blacks. I mean, everybody knows the stories, how we're told about how non-whites had their windows put through, non-whites had their letterboxes set on fire, packy scum would be painted on the wall outside. Well, no, all these things happened to white people, and it was non-whites doing it to them so that they could drive them out of an area, drive the property prices down. And they would get together so that they could buy up areas. I mean, this is particularly what the Muslims would do. They will move into an area and they'll put all their money together and they'll buy up the shops, and the Muslims will frequent the shops, make sure that the shops keep going, and eventually all the white people will move out. This is an invasion, and this is the ethnic cleansing that is going on. This is what the genocide is. If you look up what genocide means, the UN definition of genocide, making conditions such that the ethnicity has to move from that area, that is a genocide. And it's being done against white people. It's not being done against blacks. We're not moving into Africa and driving the people out from there. Even at the height of the British Empire, we were never doing anything like that. We never moved into other people's countries and drove them all out. We went into India and we built the railways. We built the telephone lines. We built the hospitals. We built the universities. And then we invited the Indians into them. And it's the same in South Africa. The South Africans, the Dutch and the Germans and the Scandinavians, they moved into South Africa. There was nobody living there at all. They built the civilization. They allowed the blacks to come in. They built the blacks their own areas, their own separate areas. And they kept segregation between them. They policed the black areas so that they didn't kill one another. And the South African blacks had the highest standard of living in the whole of Africa. And yet we're somehow told that these blacks were being persecuted by us. And they never built anything for themselves. Everything was built by the white man. And we never drove them out of anywhere. They were the ones that came to us. And it's exactly the same now. We're not driving them out from any of their countries, but they are flooding into ours. And that's this, and we still have this phenomenon of the white flight today. And you look at London. It's so sad. You just don't hear a Cockney accent anymore. Why would you hear where would you hear a Cockney accent? London is 60% non-white. It's probably 20% mixed race out of the other 40% that is supposedly white. And they all speak this sort of Jamaican, patois, Pakistani slang that sounds like Sadiq Khan. Sadiq Khan, who can't even form proper sentences. That's what today's Londoner sounds like. Now, I can remember the Cockney voice. It's it's the same voice that, well, the same voice that they tried to copy in the old Walt Disney movies. But you just don't hear it apart from in old age pensioners now. And the poor old age pensioners that are left there in London that can't afford to move out, their life is a living hell. They go to the supermarket. In their younger years, they would go to the shops and they would hear all the gossip and they'd hear all the news and they'd hear everything that's going on the grapevine. And now they go to the shops and everybody's speaking a different language. Nobody's got the time to stop and pass the time of day with them. It's all just about making the money and they don't want to stop and talk. And why would you want to stop and talk to somebody that speaks a completely different language to you anyway? So Enoch Powell was talking about white flight back then in the 60s. He was talking about white flight and it's still going on today. People are still moving out of these areas. And even then, they don't admit it. They will move to an area in the country and they'll say, oh, we left because of the crime. We left because of the drugs. But they won't admit that what they really left was because it was full of blacks and non-whites. And they were the ones that drove up the crime rate, drove up the amount of people that were selling drugs. You just don't want to admit it. Next up in his speech, he talks about the fact that non-whites will not integrate. How can we integrate people that are a completely different colour to us? How can we integrate them into society? You can't, because they are always going to look different. The only way that you could integrate them is if we interbred with them. And if we interbred with them, we would cease to be entirely. We would no longer have a British ethnicity, which we don't appear to have in legal writing anyway, which we should have. I mean, the ethnic minorities, they're all allowed to have their ethnicity. That's all protected. But as soon as you say, well, the British are white British are an ethnicity all of their own, then you're not allowed to advocate for them, because that's racism. And we get told all these lies that we've had Negroes in the country since Roman times. You could count the amount of Negroes on one hand that were in this country before the end of the Second World War. It's 70 years ago is when we got the floods of immigration. Before then, we really did not have very many in the country at all. And people wouldn't breed with them. And they were just living in the docks area because they would be working on ships. You know, there's no history of Negroes or interbreeding with Negroes in Britain. The phrase was always the wogs stop at Calais, or the wogs start at Calais, because they couldn't make their way across the English Channel. And it's fairly recent that we've had all this trouble with immigration. And besides the fact that you cannot integrate white into black without creating grey, they're not encouraged to integrate. they are encouraged to continue following their traditions and beliefs and culture that they had in their own country. They're told, oh, yes, you can join our police force. You can wear your turbans. You don't have to wear a police helmet. This is the Sikhs. The Muslims are told that, yeah, you can work in these supermarkets and you don't have to handle pork. You can have your 5 tea breaks a day so that you can go and pray to Mecca and stick your ass in the air. They're not encouraged to integrate. And this is what multiculturalism means. It means that they don't integrate. It means that they keep their own culture. And you wouldn't expect people to change their culture. You wouldn't expect people to forget all their heritage. And we don't expect them to. We encourage them to keep their heritage. We encourage them to be proud of being black, proud of being African, proud of being Jewish. And yet we are not allowed to be proud of being white. We're not allowed to be proud of our heritage. We're told our heritage is soaked in blood, never mind the fact that it's soaked in the blood of our ancestors that fought to keep our country free and sacrificed to build the European civilization that we have that is now being taken down by these invaders. But the idea of integration is just nonsensical, is illogical. It could never happen without destroying the white race and turning us into a brown race. That's all there is to it. And he was pointing that out. So none of this is false. Everything that he pointed out in his speech has been proven to be correct. And yet the leftists are still making a fuss about it today, still saying how terrible it was and how terrible that he used these terms. But he doesn't even use derogatory terms in it. And he says that the black man will have the whip hand over the white. Well, that's what blacks are called. They are called blacks. They're called black men, especially back then. This idea of people of colour, or coloured people, or whatever the politically correct term is for use. That's all it is political correctness. And a very interesting part in the speech comes up near the end, where he says that the violence will be of American proportions by the turn of the century. So he meant by the millennium. By the year 2000, the violence in Britain will be up to the levels that it was back then in America. And sure enough, we read last month that in London, there is more stabbings, more murders in London than there were in New York that month. Which is this is the fulfillment of everything that he said. I'm sure it's been at American proportions for quite some time. I mean, the minute you start getting shootings, gangland shootings in Britain by Negroes, then we have crime that is of American proportions. But this is specifically of the same proportions as New York. And that made headline news. But nobody was pointing out, oh, well, that's exactly what Enoch Powell predicted. They were just saying, oh, well, this is due to the police not having enough invested in them. It's because Theresa May has cut back on police. No, it isn't. It's because London is 60% non-white. If you import a lawless, savage people into your country, they are going to behave like lawless savages. And that's what these black gangs are. We never had white gangs before. They're basically carrying out their instinctive urges to form tribes and have inter-tribal warfare, the same as they do on the African continent. That's what it is. That's the cause of it. And he finishes his speech by pointing out that you cannot see all of this and not speak up about it. You cannot see the fire burning without pointing it out and raising alarm and doing what you can to put it out. And he points out that there's a great betrayal that is going on in the establishment and the politicians, and they are betraying the people because they are not speaking up about this. So don't forget, this is 50 years ago that he is saying this, 50 years ago. And that's how long this great betrayal has been going on for. And this man, Enoch Powell, he was brave enough to speak up about it. But where are the politicians since then? Where are the people with loyalty and bravery and courage enough to stand up and speak about it today. I mean, I did have high hopes for Jacob Rees-Mogg. I hope that he was, he must be able to see what's going on. I mean, he has spoken to people of nationalist persuasions. He sees London. He must see the great replacement. And yet, instead of having the courage to speak up about it, like Enoch Powell, he just hides and says, "Oh, I believe the same as my father. Look at what my father said. My father criticized Enoch Powell, and I have the same beliefs." He didn't have the balls to speak up and go against the establishment. Will anyone have the courage to speak up and support Enoch Powell in the establishment? Nigel Farage apparently had lots to do with him towards the end of his life. Nigel Farage supported him, but I haven't heard Farage speaking up about this speech. They all seem pretty unanimous in condemning it, and yet everything in it is truthful. Everything in it has come true. And of course, he talks about how he sees the River Tiber foaming with much blood, and that's really the only violent part in it. And the country is foaming with blood. Murders every day, stabbings every day. More acid attacks than they get in India. You know, Britain is now the capital of acid attacks. Sweden is the capital of non-white rape of white people. I guess if you take South Africa out of it, Sweden is second. But all of this is the River Tiber foaming with much blood. We've had a police officer that was hacked, had his head hacked off in a riot. We've had Drummerly Rigby that was hacked up with a machete. We had a grandmother who was beheaded with a machete. We've had bombs going off. We've had hundreds of children maimed by nail bombs. We've had police stabbed on Westminster Bridge. All these things that were just beyond his imagination. All he could say is that he saw the River Tiber foaming with much blood, and it was entirely accurate. How can anybody say that this speech was wrong, or this speech didn't come true? And they're lying through their teeth when they say that. And I am so disappointed to see that Jacob Rees-Mogg is just the same as all the rest, and he's lying through his teeth and claiming that this speech was wrong, this speech was false, it didn't come true, what a pack of lies it is, when he really should have come out in support. If he'd come out in support of Enoch Powell, he would have got masses of support himself. He would have got masses of notoriety, and he would have got the same support that Enoch Powell did. Enoch Powell appealed to everyone. Everybody that I speak to that is over the age of 60 talks about what a great man Enoch Powell was. And I'm not talking about nationalists. I'm just talking about anybody that I speak to over 60 brings up Enoch Powell and how everything he said was true, and how tragic it was that he wasn't elected, how he wasn't our prime minister. I mean, the man was a great hero, and Jacob Rees-Mogg is doing him a great disservice by trying to distance himself from him. And I just hope he pays attention to the response that this tweet that he put out gained. He's had about 1,000 replies to it, or over 1,000 replies, and about 90% of them are expressing disgust at how he could say such things, and disappointment. And everybody that was supporting him, which were from, you know, all different classes, he's now lost masses of that support by going against this great speech by Enoch Powell and not supporting it. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast. As I say, next week, hopefully I'll be here with Max Musson. Don't forget that we do require donations to keep the radio station going, and we've had to pay out a fair bit of money for tech work over the last week to get these new players up and to get the site HTTPS. We do have a Bitcoin wallet, which you'll find at the sidebar of the site. So if you can afford to, please send us some. It will get spent wisely. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back next week. And of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you until then.
an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.